Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Gonna say something that either blow your mind or confuse you.
Okay.
You can never be backwards on a set of stairs.
You learn something new every day, I suppose.
My brain hurts. Welcome to. Oh my. This is like the stop clock is right twice a day thing I did to you last time.
I'm just paying what I'm owed.
That is my brain. My brain hurts. Welcome to And That's Why We Messed Up, the podcast talking about nerdery, geekism, and all else in between from a South London postcode. I am Shannon's, one of your amazing hosts. Next to me is the instant classic, bruv. You all right?
Sup. Sweet Christmas indeed.
Oh, yes. Little hint there. And big man on the other road. You alright?
No, I'm good. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Hope everyone is well.
Cool. This week is my turn, and I'm kind of going to do an episode of two halves that are actually linked. And first off, I think I'd like to talk about Moon Knight. So if you listen to this fresh off the bat when recording, Moon Knight just ended. And yeah, I'd like to know your verdict on the six episodes that we got.
Well, I'm only halfway through.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'll literally be listening to your review of it, so I'm all good so far.
Okay, I'm gonna navigate spoilers, I guess. So
nope, we're gonna spoil the hell out of it. We don't care about anyone. You haven't watched it by now, it's your own fault. Boom.
Wow. No,
I said okay, it.
Bruv spoken, so it's spoilerific. So there you are, I'm going to fast forward 2 minutes.
Okay, if I'm going to be respectful, there might be spoilers here.
There might be spoilers, so if you really don't want to know, just fast forward until we talk about the next topic. About 2-3 minutes or so, I don't know. Bruv, what did you think about Moon Knight?
Yeah, it's alright.
Wow, really? That's not what you said.
I mean, it's not on the level of Generation X pilot from the
early okay.
days.
Generation.
Did you? You hit your head. Are you okay? You feel all right? Let's calm down there. Jeez, I think he is. Okay.
Hey. Put some respect on Generation X. It was one of the first Marvel adaptations that failed. So put some respect to its name. Anyway, in all seriousness, Moon Knight.
And we all laugh.
in all seriousness, Moon Knight was a really good show. I had no doubts it would be. I can't say a bad thing about it. A lot of subject matters that were quite close to home. I thought his British accent was pretty good. Like had like one thing I can say when he was the differences between Mark and Stephen. It's like you want to protect Stephen, and
yes.
It kind of you can't, with that image. He lost that Oscar Isaac charm.
Yes.
So it was like at first I said to Big Man and Sis was that it makes him come off as uglier than he is, which I think is kind of when I think about it, it's kind of harsh because it's not. I say ugly is the wrong word. It just makes him come off as smaller than he is, if that makes more sense. Because Stephen Grant is the guy who, like, well, sadly, it was created to take the beatings. Was the one who was there to protect Mark from the real hurts in his life. So it was basically his human shield, and he kind of acted like that, or human punching bag, if to be more apt, sadly. So when it came to those night and day aspects of those characters, it worked so well, and it was just like honestly, from reading the comic book it was great. It was done really well.
I completely agree. I think when you first meet Stephen Grant, it's the whole kind of thing. And you know, let's give credit to Oscar Isaac for making himself look butters, because it's a credit to his acting ability that I can see a difference in the actors that he portrays at every point. There's a difference between him in Dune. There's a difference in Moon Knight. It's different, and there should be, and it's visible, and it's commanding, and it's amazing. And as Stephen, there's that kind of hidden. You spend a lot of time, like when he's saying those awkward things, like "raw guy" and all that stuff. We know you observe people like that in your everyday. That's kind of tryhards. A lot of tryhardism about it. But when you get to the depth of what he actually does and the strength within, it's an amazing kind of journey to see that. The strength, it's almost the strength in weakness kind of thing, and that there are just basic tenets that he sticks to, and loyalty's one of them. And seeing the, you know, it's one thing to see a journey of someone who's kind of got it all and has the confidence. It's another thing to see a journey of somebody that we see as the underdog. There's the usual pet hates about the location of stuff in London. And just for those who may not know, it wasn't filmed in the UK, even though it used that kind of UK iconography and background. It wasn't actually filmed in the UK. But it was pretty good. And I think there's a lot around trauma, especially Moon Knight. And I find it quite interesting at the juxtaposition of using the UK, a place that notoriously has taken a lot from Egypt, used it to its own abandon, taken it, put it in museums and be like, yeah, this is ours now, you can't have it, from Egypt, and ending that kind of journey of reclamation in Egypt as well, which I thought was really good. There was a lot of little things that I felt were done beautifully. Costume design was on point. Costume design was
Mr. Knight's costume was clean. Moon Knight was good as well, but Mr. Knight's suit, the biddy gloves, I was like, yeah.
That's clean. Big man, you've got something good to look forward to. There's a really good fight at the end.
I cannot wait.
Yeah.
Honestly, there's some good fight scenes at the end. I think where MCU's at right now with the TV stuff is they've got it down in terms of pacing. I thought the episodes kept everything tight, kept it moving. It's almost the kind of show which is on its feet, so you don't really get time to rest on it.
Yeah.
If anything, I feel like they were kind of like the quieter, I use that loosely, episodes were like 1 and 3. Mm. And then everything was just kind of like just pace. And I thought it was executed really well. I thought the last boss battle between Amit and Khonshu was done really well. I wasn't too sure how it was going to look, but it looked really well. And I liked, one of the things I really loved is the fact that the titles subtly changed every week. Every week is a little bit more revealed, a little less, some taken away, some revealed. And also kind of showing about how we see culture as well. So one of the things that I noticed was in one of the ending tunes, I use a tune that's like a well-known song, but we know it from a hook. We know it from Aaliyah, I Don't Know What to Tell You, that hook, but they used the original for the end of Moon Knight, which I thought was brilliant, just to show that kind of weaving of, you may think we're telling a new story, you may think you don't know who we are, but you know what? You do know this background. And it's very interesting, the fact that Mark is Jewish and has been chosen by an Egyptian an Egyptian to be an Avatar. I first find that very, 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 very interesting. And yeah, I thought they handled the imagery of abuse very well. I thought it was done really well. It took my breath away a bit. They didn't dwell on the details. I don't think they needed to. I think they left a lot to imagination. I thought it was really strong. I really enjoyed Moonlight. But weirdly, I'm fine without a season two. I'd like to, but I'm fine without it. Do you get what I mean?
No, you're wrong. There should be a season two.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. I'm challenging you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for challenging me. So, Bruv, for you, how does it like compare with the storylines that you've read with Moonlight? Because I'm not familiar with Moonlight. Only like rough around the edges.
With the comic book, especially from when I last read it, it's been a while since I read Moonlight, if I'm going to be honest, because I started reading it back again when the Mr. Knight character or Mr. Knight version of him was introduced, done by Warren Ellis.
Yeah.
And he was kind of like a PI style, like a film noir kind of character. And if I remember rightly, the story arc just abruptly ended. There wasn't really any kind of resolution to it. It was just basically, this is a part of him now, deal with it kind of thing you got from it. And then the next follow-up was pretty much more, it was kind of more of what you saw in the series, where because the idea with Moonlight is like, you don't know if he actually is insane or not. And that's what you question. You question it, is this actually happening or is it all in his head? Because there was that was the whole concept. Like you kept seeing these things happen and these white legends. Then a lot of times he would end up back in that place where in that asylum. And you're like, okay, was that just another event or what did actually happen? That was kind of nice to be back in that situation where you're like, is this actually happening? Did any of this happen? Yeah. Kind of thing. So you know, it was from an old school comic book reading standpoint, it hit the nail on the head personally. So okay.
Okay, cool. That's our tiny review on Moon Knight. Big Man will follow up eventually when he watches it. Exactly. Also, want to shout out Shuti Gatwa as the new Doctor. It's been announced today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be interesting. And Russell T Davies is back on writing duties as well for Doctor Who.
Good, good, good.
So looking forward to that with interest. I've seen a lot of people go, you don't know I'm going to be watching the Blue Box TV show, which I love. And a shout out because I know he's brilliant in Sex Education. So I'm looking forward to that work. Should be good.
All I'm going to say to all the fans out there, be prepared for a storm of negativity, but at the end of the day, stand strong, stand positive.
Yep.
We know all know it's going to be a good... We're going to see how it turns out. It's not about the colour of the skin, it's about the performance and the passion they put into the project. So let's see what passion they have for it, okay? Everyone's going to get up in arms when you change something. Be open to change and just embrace it. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But don't make it be about how he looks or how he acts, not how he looks and what the color of his skin is. All right,
it people, is always orientation or yes. anything else like that. No,
stay strong, stay positive, and let's see how it works out.
Very true, very true. So, on that note, we're gonna get to my topic for the week, and I wanted to, off the back of Moonlight, kind of point out for me. Ask the question, what made Luke Cage so damn awesome?
White people.
Wow. Excuse me? What the hell? Come there and clap you. What? What are you on today?
hey, I'm joking. Hey. Yes and no, I'm not kind of joking to be fair, because if I'm going to be honest, when it comes to Luke Cage in general, there was a period, or a long period, where he wasn't prominent in comic books. He would make appearances in Daredevil from time to time, but he wasn't. He didn't have his own comic book line for a while. Like I think the last time, at a certain point in time, I think the last major comic book series he had was during the period of Max, when they brought out Marvel Max, which was pretty much a more explicit, more violent, more X-rated version of Marvel. Like Punisher had a story, Luke Cage, Shang-Chi, Jessica Jones. A bunch of them had like their own more explicit, more, you know, more adult oriented content.
Bloody hell, you just actually say Marvel matches. That's just
brought
back to a throwback,
ain't it? Yeah, because that's back, because that takes us back to the days when we were just hanging out in the comic books, shooting the shit, mate. That was yeah. that was the last period that Luke Cage had any prominence at the time. But then, but then when a certain writer, Brian Michael Bendis, like I said, he was working on Daredevil a lot, and he was using Luke Cage quite a bit, and Jessica Jones and Iron Fist to make appearances from time to time, but he also was the man who brought him more to prominence in the 2000s when it came to putting him in on the Avengers, making him a leader of the Avengers eventually, the Thunderbolts team. And the main reason why he did that was because Brian Michael Bendis has kids, adopted kids who were black. So he wanted them to see more characters or more people like them. So he started to use Luke Cage more. He created Miles Morales, and the rest is history. And that's why, and I think that helped to give Luke Cage a bit more love and a bit more prominence in the comic book industry. That's where you get the Netflix series.
Yeah. Shout out to Brian Michael Bendis every time. And whenever shit comes up with being racist, Brian Michael Bendis is not having it. He's not going to sit quietly. He will call you out. So shout out to Brian Michael Bendis every goddamn time for doing the right thing. So yeah, that brings us to... what I'd like to do is talk about, like, in my opinion, the awesomeness of the show. And I think one of the things that the thing with, you know, with Luke Cage, obviously, it's, you know, it's part of the Defenders, part of the whole, you know, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, Daredevil, Iron Fist to the Defenders. And, you know, shout out to Chair Hadari Coker, who was a music journalist and a film and a television writer and producer. Before he'd done Luke Cage, he did NCIS, Almost Human, Ray Donovan, and he was a writer on Creed 2 as well.
Okay.
Which I found very interesting. I think the thing that I like about Luke Cage is that it kind of demonstrates to me how you can have the comic, you can bring something, it's almost like a renovation, you can bring something down, like, back to its bare bones and start to build something new on those bones, but keep the damn bones. And one of the things that hit with me, because once again, it's a comic I wasn't very familiar with, just knew about kind of like in passing. But for me, like, the series of Luke Cage hit me as a hip-hop head. I'm a huge hip-hop head. And like, it hit me on levels, because you didn't see it portrayed, you didn't see these things portrayed in a way, and especially in terms of black culture, that's very superficial. So here I go on trying to break down some of the elements that I love about Luke Cage, and something people may not know and understand and appreciate about Luke Cage. So it's the fact that hip-hop is often broken down into elements of hip-hop, right? There are people who say it's 4, 7, 5, 10, whatever, right? But it breaks down to MCing, DJing, breakdancing, graffiti, and beatboxing, right? Five elements. And a lot of that is all the way through Luke Cage. So season one, Luke Cage, every episode is named after a song by Gangstar. Season two, every episode is named by a song from P-Rock and CL Smooth. This is foundational hip-hop. And to get into the weeds of it, the music production of the show, the composition was done by Adrian Young. Adrian Young did the music for Black Dynamite.
No.
Of course he did.
Yeah, he did. Oh, he did. Oh, yeah. Now you know, you're not going to unknow. The other musical creation was also, you know, as well as Chio Hadori Coker himself, was also done by Ali Shaheed Muhammad. Ali Shaheed Muhammad is one of the members of A Tribe Called Quest, and also part of the supergroup Lucy Pearl, which featured Raphael Sadiq from Tony 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 and Dawn Robinson from En Vogue. The first musical group to guest to appear in season one, episode one of Luke Cage, is Raphael Sadiq. So that ties in the R&B kind of thing, kind of element that the hip hop gravitated towards. In terms of the other thing I love about it, I'm going to go back and forth, so keep with me, is the fact that Harlem is as much as a place as Hell's Kitchen.
Mm.
And it's back to the Stan Lee thing of wanting to have a place that you had, that you could see consequences in and that lived and breathed. Not like Gotham and Metropolis. One of the things Stan Lee didn't like about DC, one of many things, was the fact that there's no consequences in Gotham and Metropolis because they're not real places.
Yeah.
Whereas Peter Parker, there's going to be a knock on to what he does, and you're going to see it. There's going to be a knock on in Hell's Kitchen with Daredevil, and it's going to be a knock on, you know, in Harlem with Luke Cage, and you can, you know, and also kind of juxtaposing these characters in familiar places helped to enhance story. And this was done brilliantly because obviously we know a lot of, you know, things about New York and what have you through that kind of, especially like with Spider-Man, it's well lit, we see all of it, it's fine. Daredevil started that kind of darker hue, looking at the grit of gentrification of Hell's Kitchen, you know, coming from what it was to what it is now. And I found it interesting that Harlem was kind of a mixture of light and dark, where it was shot in these ways that also showed the history of Harlem that people didn't know about and how important Black people are to that community. It also showed the fact that it's not as simple as just music. It's the, you know, there's the whole thing online of the, there's what's called the Luke Cage syllabus, which is all the books referenced throughout Luke Cage that you can read. I will link that in the show notes. So it's things like Ralph Ellison talking about, which is The Invisible Man, and Julius Lester talking about Black folktales, up to Walter Mosley, Little Green, which is, you know, that whole kind of film noir kind of, you know, devil, you know, most famously known for Devil in the Blue Dress, which is a fantastic book and fantastic film, through to, like, you know, Kenyatta and all these other things, and the importance of barbershop culture. Because you could say that if Pops had been left alone, none of the shit would have gone down in Luke Cage, if Pops had been left alone. And because barbershop, as we like covered in season one, barbershops are intrinsic to the community. There's a lot that happens around it, and there's even little things I noticed watching back, like where Misty kind of hints that she was protected as a young girl from nefarious people because of the barbershop. So it's kind of not just a male space, but also a space that could operate as protection. And in that being fucked up, he fucks everything, because everything from there just goes pear when that shop just is, not only is Pops killed, but the shop's destroyed. It's like, that's the heart gone right there. And I just love the way that things like interweave. So there's things I'm looking at, like the fact that Mike Coulter is shot beautifully. He is shot absolutely beautifully, because there notoriously is an issue, or was an issue, around filming Black people, especially dark Black people, tend to look dusty. And a lot of it sometimes down to print, actual print, and the ranges. Now with digital and changes to that, it doesn't have to be that way anymore. Misty, you know, oh my God. Sometimes Misty is shot so beautifully, it hurts my heart.
Don't talk to me about her, please. Please don't.
Oh God, it's just shot beautifully. And I love the fact that they were saying, when I was looking into it, they were saying that with Luke, obviously, he's a man trying to stay undercover. He's not going to walk around in this Power Man costume because it's yellow. So what they do a lot of times is that they'll have him in the blue Carhartt or another hoodie with a yellow on the inside to frame his face. So it's like he's always uplit in that gold until the time they actually do that reveal where he has to wear that costume the one time on the escape. But they always try to frame him in yellow rather than put him in yellow. So like, a guy who's undercover is not going to want to be walking around the hood in yellow. And it's like, that's true. It's just when I started to look into it, I was like, oh my God, I had to put music on when I was like doing my research, because it was just kind of hitting my heart in ways of like how things that are kind of linked, especially like musically. So bear with me, guys. So you now said that Ali Shaheed Muhammad was a part of A Tribe Called Quest and Lucy Pearl.
Yeah.
A Tribe Called Quest then worked with Leaders of New School, which brings you to Busta Rhymes. Gangstar is based like on all the songs from Gangstar. That's DJ Premier and Guru. DJ Premier works with almost everybody in prominence in hip hop. Guru did a lot of jazz stuff as well, and they're both, you know, and may Guru rest. Guru did pass away a couple of years back, so that means we've got the kind of the R&B stuff covered. Rafael Sadiq with that, Dawn from En Vogue. You've got the guests that always come through. So the second guest is Faith Evans, who was wife to Big E. Yeah. You also have Dapper Dan and Jidenna. Jidenna looked very like kind of that Hell's the Chief song, where he looks very like suited and booted. To me, reflected the kind of elements you don't see with hip hop, which is about the dress of it. And Dapper Dan actually appears twice. He appears in season one and season two. And if you don't know who Dapper Dan is, one, look him up. Number two, you actually do know who he is, because you can think of the front cover of Paid in Full, the front album of Paid in Full, or Salt Pepper's first album, or like LL Cool J's going through the leather phase. That is all Dapper Dan. So shout out to that. It goes into the fact that you've got like the Delphonics, which is old school soul, Ghostface Killah in season two, Method Man in season one, which links us to Wu-Tang Clan. So that's kind of like almost like almost all of that New York kind of base covered, which links Stephen Marley makes an appearance in season two, which links to the foundations of hip hop, because the foundations of hip hop are like a lot of reggae tunes that links to the Marley family, which is, you know, obviously Speak for Themselves. KRS-One is in season two. Played a Kiss, you know, from The Lox and Bad Boy. And I love the fact that the last guest in season two is Rakim, the greatest rapper of all time. Fight me. I don't, yeah, any, don't come. Don't come. Yeah, seriously. The greatest rapper of all time is Rakim, the greatest MC of all time. And the only other person who could have ever taken on Rakim, unfortunately, is no longer with us, Big L. And even Big L gets referenced in Pops' eulogy. So it's this constant information and flow about hip-hop. You know, the fact that Cottonmouth has the Biggie portrait in the back with the King. And another thing I noticed as well is that the colours of Cottonmouth kind of run through a lot of the colours of the Defenders. But he never sticks to one, because it's almost like you can't ever be the King, Rude Boy, ever. So there's a lot of red, which is from Daredevil. There's a lot of kind of that greens a bit, and a bit of yellow. So it's like it's almost touching all of the Defenders at some point. Jessica Jones noticed she goes through purple, but it's purple and blues, because purple isn't her, it's that piece of shit. Mm. So it's almost like she hasn't really come into her own yet.
Well, the blue does. The blue does represent her original costume, and she was, well, you know, and she didn't play it in the series. Her original character was Jewel. So,
and I do like the fact that the Defenders, like in their coloring, are like the primary colors. You know, the red of Daredevil, the yellow of Luke Cage, the blue Jessica Jones. I wish you get a green with a bit of yellow if we let you, kind of ting. And then I find it funny that Kingpin's white. A lot of his thing around Kingpin is white. It's
always white
throughout everything else. And I just love that depth. I love the fact that I was sitting there as a hip hop head, and I'm listening to what the songs to like the titles, what that meant and the significance. And it was something that hadn't been done in that way before. And that's why I absolutely adored Luke Cage, let alone going into the performances, let alone going into Mike Colter, let alone going into, you know, Frankie Faison on all of it, let alone going to Shades. And I don't think we talk about that enough as well, the fact that that Shades was straight up bisexual, straight up was, and the line that he says, you know, I loved you so much I was a bitch for you. And I was like, well, I remember seeing that and being like, I'm sorry, what? Because I just found it so, like, you don't really see it. Mm-hmm. And I like that we saw it. I like that we have that conversation, because obviously, you know, the rhetoric around, you know, Jailhouse and this, that and the other and what have you is very negative. And not to, like, throw shade on and kind of, you know, it's Oz, isn't it? It's that kind of, it's rapey. It's all that horrible stuff. Whereas it's like, it's not always like that. But also, that's not. It's more complicated, and that's why I liked the. Every character was complicated, and I did see some reviews that were saying things like, "The thing about Luke Cage is that you're not just watching the plots unfold, you're watching the people. So even the parts that may be a bit like, oh, you're still, you want to see how those people are going along. And I think the device of always having Claire turn up in every single one was a really good, because we've got someone that we're always linked to, we're always looking through and looking for. And
it just connects everything.
Completely.
It's basically equivalent to Stan Lee being in every single MCU film. You kind of need that thing that ties everyone together, or Coulson bringing the Avengers together. You need that person that just that catalyst, basically.
Completely.
And it's Rosario Dawson, so you know.
There is that too. There is that.
Always easy on your eye also helps as well.
Say again.
I said also her being easy on your eye definitely helps as well.
Easy on your eyes, we talking about.
But yeah, that was how are you looking lips? Jeez. Yeah,
I'd love to do more lips or something. Woohoo! Yeah. Hey, right, I don't remember if Rose Dawson Rosario. I don't remember that. No.
But yeah, that was my little rant on the way of the way that Luke Cage personifies like the 4 to 5 elements of hip hop, why it was awesome, why the characters have life and depth and breadth. And I think even the kind of, I think originally I remember like seeing Cottonmouth and being like, yeah, Cottonmouth. And when he got taken, I was like, oh. But I think in the grand scheme of things, I like it overall now with distance behind me. I look back on that now and go, this was a brilliant piece. You know, yes, there's always, I'm going to want season 3. But I'm also like, I can see where there should be a tightness now. And that's the hit that I think that they all took, that Daredevil, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones took, is like playing with how long do we make this?
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What does the story do? How can we follow the characters? You know, and why we get this tightness that I think reflects in Moon Knight. I think for me, the familiarity pushed it to another level. But with that same energy, it makes me want to know more about Moon Knight and what some of the things mean and what they're significant as, if you get what I mean.
Mm.
You know, and yeah, that was just my little joyous rant. I will put links in the description to the Luke Cage syllabus. I will also put a link in the description to this amazing guy called TL Cross, who shows, does all these videos on Instagram and TikTok about how artists and hip-hop are like interlinked, interchanged, and it goes into places you don't even think about, and it's really absolutely amazing, like how you get from like a gospel thing, like a gospel choir or this weird thing in the Caribbean, to Prodigy from Mobb Deep, and I'm not even joking, it's really, really good. So I will leave a link in the description to that. But the beat, the heartbeat that runs throughout Luke Cage's hip-hop,
the soundtrack was always the highlight of the show. I mean, the show.
Oh, gotcha.
But you have to admit, I mean, when I was watching it first time around, don't get me wrong, I was fully invested. But when you're hearing tracks in the back, then you're like, damn, man, this song, tunes getting played in this program.
And because it's a mixture of all of it, and it's got a bit, because with Adrian Young, you have that blaxploitation, because there is an element of blaxploitation in there. And I think sometimes you need to lead. I think that before we kind of went to be a bit like, oh, it's a dirty little secret, and it's something to be ashamed of. Black Dynamite broke that. We thoroughly enjoyed the match. In fact, I'm gonna watch that tonight, because I need to watch that whole bit with the extra again, where the man gets to that, goes, what the what, and they cut the scene again and do it with an extra because man's not taking a hit. And also that whole bit where they do the whole trying to figure out what the plot is with things that make absolutely no goddamn sense. I look forward to more things like that, because I do think that the elephant in the room is I didn't like Iron Fist.
Oh, no offense, no one liked Iron Fist.
No one.
The thing is, it's like okay. I'm probably play devil's advocate here, and okay. So, what I noticed a lot were that there were people from the Asian community who didn't like the fact that it was a white guy coming in to do it. But I can't be offended by that, due to the fact that I grew up with Iron Fist, and Iron Fist has always been, I'm sorry, he's always been a blonde haired, blue eyed white guy, yep. And it was so. That's what I was expecting. So that wasn't my. I had no problem with that aspect of it. I'm not saying it is a problem. I'm not saying it isn't a problem. But the fact of the matter is, there are other characters that are playing with Asian characters in the Marvel universe that, you know, that will hit that stereotype. But like the problem I had with that argument is basically saying that you're not allowed to appreciate the culture.
Yeah,
and like because I'm crying out, I've obviously grown up, I grew up in South London, I love martial arts, but it felt like the argument was they're not allowed, if you're not Asian, you can't learn martial arts, and I lost my martial arts for everybody, you know, if you wanted to learn, that's the thing. But I kind of get the anger due to the fact that how many times have you seen a generic white guy come into a different culture and just take it and leave, you know. I do get it but that's not my argument for why Moon Knight was crap. Iron Fist was crap. I apologize. Moon Knight was not crap. Moon Knight was awesome. Iron Fist is crap. The problem with Iron Fist is that they rushed it,
yep,
and Finn didn't want to put in the work.
No,
like from day one, when he got on set, he said he didn't want to do it. He didn't want to do the martial arts. But, you know, you should have read a contract before you signed up, mate. That's what I'm going to say.
How can you not do the role where martial arts is a part of the role?
Exactly. And, you know, so like, when I'm like, okay, I'm a heckler for good choreography, for good martial arts. You know, we grew up with Kung Fu films, and you know me and my Jackie Chan love. I take choreography very, very, very personally, very seriously, yeah, very personally. And the fight, like, what gets me is that a lot of the guys who do the stunt choreography, the fight choreography in all the Marvel stuff, all the Netflix stuff, all the DC stuff, are the guys I followed on YouTube. So like, you know, people like the £1,000 stunt fight team, the EMC Monkeys, these guys, like, basically did a bunch of fan films on YouTube, and like, a lot of them are working in the industry to this day, and they're doing amazing jobs and working on big films. But so I know for a fact you've got a good solid team on these shows. And there was an interview with one of the guys on the show. He was saying basically we were just told we had this amount of time to learn to sort this out, and then we had to go. So we weren't given any prep time. Shit like that, you need like at least a few months to get to train your actors, to get them integrated into the choreography and the takes, and get to work with the people they'll be working with, and then boom. But we weren't given that time, and you could tell because the fight choreography was sloppy as fuck. I mean, there was a fight scene between Danny and this guy who was doing Drunken Style, and Drunken Style is my favorite fighting style when it comes to Kung Fu in general. It's my favorite fighting style. And he just pissed on there. It pissed me off how... Ugh.
I can hear it in your voice, bro.
Oh, it's disgusting. I mean, right, I can't professionally do Drunken Style, but I can professionally watch it, and I was watching shit. So, but yeah. I've done my round on Iron Fist.
I mean, I think that's the thing with Iron Fist. It's like... By comparison, Jessica Jones had work on it because Jessica Jones, and I will maybe come to Jessica Jones another episode because she does need her own one. Jessica Jones was more of a thing from the... Every one of those series had something to say. Jessica Jones was about trauma. It was about recovery. It was about that this is not a neat, tidy package. It was also about filming from the female gaze. It's very different. And also kind of the importance of female relationships, especially in season one. You know, and there was something to say. There was work to be done. And my girl, Kirsten, put in the work. Because I saw her training, where she put in the work to do what she did, and it was convincing. We're not talking complicated scenes, because Jessica Jones is a brawler. She's not someone who's refined in her art form. It's just she's brawling for Jesus. Do you know what I mean? Luke Cage has that same kind of energy of just it's that kind of like he almost makes it so look so simplistic that you're a chief.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you idiot. That kind of thing. She throws you across half the world. Do you know what I mean? Daredevil is probably the most technical brawling that we saw. And that was some, I mean, you know, the corridor scene is oh my God, that's one of the best. I mean, I remember when that premiered, I was asleep. Clint watched it. My husband watched it in the AM. And I heard a shout. And I ran out like something was wrong. And he's like, watch this. And when I saw this scene, I was like, oh my God. Oh my. And I just want to point out, I had not seen any of Daredevil to this point, right? I've been woken up, it's in the AM, and I'm just seeing, this is the first thing I'm seeing is that corridor scene. And I was like, what in the. And so remember, I don't know who Daredevil is. I don't know it's Charlie Cox. I don't know anything. I just see this and I go, what is this? So, and everybody put in weight for all that they were doing. You know, in Luke Cage, it was everyone put in weight. I mean, and when you look at who's in it, you're like, just a bit like Alfred Woodward and Ali, like Marshala Ali. Like, what are we doing here? Like for real? Oh, okay, of course. And to have Iron Fist, like my issue, I think the issue with Iron Fist, and I get at the time why those voices were very loud about him being a white guy, because there were so many white, you know, the kind of white protagonist that comes into this thing, takes it over, and doesn't give credit where credit is due.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in the day with Green Hornet, for God's sake, do you know what I mean? Like, literally, Carradine stole from Bruce Lee. How is Carradine anywhere in pissing distance?
Well, to be fair, it wasn't Carradine personally.
It wasn't Carradine per se, the producers, but on a level, I'm still vexed about it all these years later. Because it's literally like...
It's not like he came into his house and went, Bruce, that's mine now. You know, because, you know, it's like, he couldn't do that because Bruce would slap in the face. But
So I got that, but I think that wasn't the... And I also feel that at the time, people were getting fed up with being told these stories that weren't immersed from the people that they're referring to.
Actually, do you remember years back when I showed you that Bruce Lee documentary? And there was, if I'm not mistaken, actually, I can't remember if it is the actress I'm thinking of that did say it, but someone said it on a documentary. The actress that played in Mandalorian, the woman that took on Rosario Dawson's character. I forget the actress's name.
Yes, yeah, I know you're talking about. I know her face, I can't remember her name.
Yeah, she's a prominent stunt woman. She's daughter to Bruce Lee's best friend, basically.
Yeah.
And she's, I think, I can't remember if it was her said, but someone said it in the document, like, at the, at the time anyway, like, I can't think of a mainstream Hollywood film with an Asian lead, like, in a romantic role.
And
at the time you couldn't, obviously now we do have a bit more, but now we do, like, you know, you have like Crazy Rich Asians, you have you have Everything Everywhere All at Once coming, which is coming out.
I can't wait to watch that
It's out
Friday next out.
And it's right, completely right
and by the same token, it we meet Luke Cage reading a book. That's literally how we meet Luke Cage, is reading the book. Because, like, yeah, black people do... The next thing is, I'm hoping, season three, Luke Cage is swimming. Because...
He can't swim! He's black.
If we're going to crush all stereotypes, let's just start doing it.
No, we don't swim, sis. No,
just... Hey, I swim like a legend. Thank you very much.
I swim like a log.
I think I get the disappointment, because it's almost like Jessica Jones had their day. You know, Luke Cage had its day. I think there was hope around it. In a way, I'm glad it went the way it did.
Mm.
I kind of was like, since you're going to be so goddamn disrespectful to martial arts, to not trying to do nothing, Finn, get your ass handed to you. I hope it hurts. I hope you get injured. Don't come back for another season. We don't want to see it. And now, Marvel, can you do this right? Because I do think if that had been successful, I don't think we'd have got a proper Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
No way we would have got a proper Shang-Chi. Because remember, after this, we still got the flipping... We were dealing with the whole, like, Ancient One thing, which at the time justified, but now I can't justify. Because, like, no, it shouldn't have been Tilda Swinton. And no, you don't have to lean into stereotypes, because you know what? Weirdly, there are thousands of writers who could help you to do that. Those who aren't cosplaying as Asian people. You can lean in and do something that is exceptional, that is intelligent, that has depth. Because you know what? All other cultures do have intelligence and depth, and you can put that there. So I'm glad he flopped. He's a chief. I said it. And I'm glad, because without that, we wouldn't have got Shang-Chi, which is absolutely brilliant. And I do think that the content that we do consume with comics, with films, with TV, should make us think more, should make us look deeper, should interrogate and make our minds fire up a bit. It's the same, like, I love the fact that on, like, Mr. Knight's outfit, it looked a little bit like weave and bandages, like, that we have on that kind of stereotypical of the Egyptian mummies.
Mm.
I absolutely love that little detailing, the little details to do with the weaponry and all this. It's like, yeah, because now we're looking at something for the entirety of it. So, in a way, I'm glad that Iron Fist was weak. It had a great opportunity to do something better. It didn't. And I think that was kind of like... It's almost fan service gone wrong.
Okay.
And laziness. You can't have a stunt team like that.
Okay.
You can't, because they are, as you've shown me, these are great stunt teams. And, you know, on the real, if Michael Cera can try in Scott Pilgrim, then Finn can goddamn try.
That is true.
But I'm not going to say I'm glad it fell. I'm never going to be glad when something I love fails, regardless of, okay, granted, I'm like,
yeah,
Finn Jones, not a fan, but
no,
I mean, he improved when he was in Defenders, and apparently he improved in season two, but I didn't watch it. But I didn't watch it. But when anything that comes from something I love fails, I'm not gonna say I'm glad it failed, because I'm not, because
I get it. I get what you mean. I'm not gonna take it back, because it's like,
no, okay, I'm gonna say you're wrong.
Thanks, that's fine, and you're wrong too.
Whatever.
Because I can imagine a world where Finn Jones had done well, and they were like, well, let's keep doing this thing that we keep doing.
Did well enough to get season two, so technically it did.
I feel like, but then they all got season twos. Except Defenders, they all got season twos. Jessica Jones got season two. Daredevil got season two.
Season three.
So, and you know, without the merger, you know, without World of Disney Plus, who knows what could have happened? But I feel like they were signed up for two. There was enough of them to go, oh, let's just keep it going. But the buzz was there, and it didn't inspire people. And you know, I hear you on a level, bruv. I don't like it when stuff I love fails, but on a level. If it meant that made way to more, it's like thought, you know, I one of the things I have as an indicator of a Marvel movie is I would say to bruv, like, if he sees it before me, I go, is it Thor Dark World?
But then the thing is, that's not fair because I actually quite like Dot 4 Dot. Well, not as much as the most, but I didn't hate it as much as everyone else did. So, but I get what you're saying.
It's my indicator, which is basically like, is it that? Which is like, for all it's whatever it is, it's still to me bad. You're I bad. Can see, yeah, I know, and then some. And I stand behind it. However, if that meant that if it took Thor Dark World to be bad, and I'm really upset that what's his name played the villain, Chris,
Eccleston.
Yeah, I'm like sad to hear that he had a really tough time on the set. I'm really sad to hear that he was actually going through an actual breakdown. I'm sad to hear that he had asked specifically not to be in heavy costume stuff, and they put him right in one. And it exacerbated his mental health problems, and he had to take some serious time out. I'm really sad to hear that.
It's a shame because the character you played, he didn't really need to have heavy shit on.
No, no, yeah,
so
exactly.
That's really ridiculous. Yeah, but then
exactly, and you know, that shouldn't have happened at all. And respect people's goddamn boundaries at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. The knock on from that was I got Taika doing Ragnarok. Bringing a different feel, and you know, hopefully, fingers crossed that Love and Thunder is just as good.
Again, like, I think I said to multiple people when it comes to Taika, like, you can tell everyone is on their game when he's doing a film, because you can tell everyone's having fun.
Yeah.
Like for example, I'm not the biggest Scarlett Johansson fan, but she I like her films in general. I do like her. I did like Black Widow, and I like her.
I
like
her. Him, that Dynamite though.
I'm sorry, what? What? I was just watching my thought because of that. I forgot what I was going to fucking say. I literally have forgotten what I was going to say now. Fuck's sake, Chantel.
Sorry.
No, I've legitimately forgot what I was going to say, seriously. You know,
Scarlett Johansson in working with Taika Waititi. In Jojo Rabbit, I'm guessing.
You completely made broken
me. You've actually fucking broken me, Jesus Christ. Oh, that's it, sorry, that's it, okay. Like her performance in Jojo Rabbit was so good, and like compared to what she usually does, because you can tell she was actually having fun.
Yeah,
and it was like, it made her performance hilarious and just genuinely good. So when things happened to her in that show, you're like, oh crap, I actually feel bad now. She made me care for a change. So you know, like so I feel like he's gonna do nothing but amazing things, because like everyone seemed to have fun on the set of Thor Ragnarok. So I can only imagine what's gonna happen. What's happened already on Love and Thunder.
And I look forward to watching Our Flag Means Death.
That's the part one, isn't it?
The part one. I'm really looking forward to that, and of course more and more of what we do in the shadows, because you know that is put that into my veins. I absolutely adore that. But yeah.
Just an off topic thing I discovered recently that's kind of pissed me off at the same time.
Uh-oh.
Makes sense. Okay. We're all fans of Buffy and Angel. Okay, obviously, I used to love Angel more than Buffy, than show wise.
Yeah.
And obviously, when Buffy ended, Angel carried on. And obviously, ended on season 5. Do you know why it ended on season 5?
You're gonna tell me some bullshit about Whedon, aren't you?
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I've heard something about this actually.
Yeah, but apparently, he pretty much pressured the studio into making a decision whether to cancel it or not, so he could carry on doing the show. Because obviously what usually happens is that they will let the show play out and then just gauge the viewership and see how it is. If it's still going good, they'll option the next season. If it's not, if it goes poorly, obviously they won't. So he didn't give them that choice. He basically just said, I need to know as soon as possible kind of thing. And then because of that, it backfired on him. And they said, all right, fine, we'll just cancel it.
Motherfucker, you know what? I'm not even going to bother, because I loved Angel. I mean, the wrong start for the Buffy fan, just like everyone else. But then when Angel had his own thing, I appreciate that a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, same.
straight away, Sam mentions Angel. I think the Adventure Time episode where they all
the puppet one.
Oh my god! Oh my god.
You're a bloody puppet.
That one. Yeah. I'm just thinking of that one.
Yeah, straight away and seeing Spike getting speared through a wall.
No, it's the bit where they all teet, or he does the thing with the eyebrows, and they all go in the line to do the walk. I'm just like, they're all Muppets, and I can't handle this.
But yeah, you saying that, it makes sense, because I remember that last episode, on big ass, was it a dragon that they're fighting?
Yeah, so basically the last episode was pretty much the end of the world. So yeah, because they basically plan to like to take out all the main heads of Wolfram and Hart.
Yeah.
And pretty much they're like, Wesley gets killed, Gunnan's injured, and it's basically left with Aurelia, Spike, Angel, and an injured Gunn. And basically, like, just hordes of demons, or I say a horde of demons, there's an alleyway of demons coming towards them, and then there's a dragon in the sky, basically. And yeah, and it ends pretty much like, all right, let's go to work, and it ends right there and then. But, like, if you read the comic books, it does basically carry on, and you find out that, that pretty much all of Los Angeles is kind of kept in a pocket dimension. So to the outside world, Los Angeles is Los Angeles, but inside, it's legitly hell. It's very strange. Like Angel is human. Gunn became a vampire. Spike is doing Spike things. All hell is broken loose.
I think I've been Marvel Harvest been. Watching Michael Rosenberg's podcasts on YouTube, and he's been talking to a lot of folk from Angel and Buffy, and I've just been like, sometimes I've been like headphones because I can't even do this anymore because I'm just getting angry. I'm just getting really angry.
Because we're hearing Spike or James Masters talk about how, like, you know, he pretty much threatened him.
Yeah,
because of his popularity, it's like, because it made sense then. Because why is Spike a good guy? And then there was that horrible scene with Buffy. It made no sense. I was like, wait, what? And but now hearing the behind the scenes bullshit, I was like, okay. So they're basically trying to make you hate him. Okay, I get. He's trying to make you hate him. To be fair, so yeah.
Yeah. Or because a character naturally just everyone was like, I really like this character. And it's like, oh my god.
You know what I mean? I had an issue with Whedon when I heard basically Chris McCarpenter, I believed it was.
Yeah.
When she became pregnant, saying, nah, that ain't going to work. So it has to be an option, keep the baby, lose the role, or get rid of the baby and keep your role. And I thought, really? This is what we're doing? If this is the level that you're thinking of, like, now, F Whedon, done with him, and to think, bruv, that we waited at the Serenity.
Oh, don't give me, dude. I've kissed that man's ass multiple times while I was working at FP, and I'm like, you know what?
Mate, I attended, an in person talk with him, and was like, walking on sunshine for days because it was like to sit down, like, and like talk and see how he was doing and how he did it and what have you, and it inspired me. It really is, and it now pisses me off. But on a level, it's like, you know, at the time you didn't have. It's not like you had the information and are doing what some people do, which is like, well, rape aside, it's like, excuse me, what? Yeah, there are some things you shouldn't be saying, and I think now that we have the knowledge, I think one, it just exposes the practices that have kept a lot of shit going. Two, it's exposed now, so we now have the opportunity to go, okay, I want to either engage with the content or I don't. You know, I haven't done my annual watch of Serenity or of Firefly. I may, because once again, the performances of the people in it honestly touch my heart every time. You know, Nathan Fillion, you know, let's not even get me started.
He will always be, a goddamn, international jewel, okay? International jewels of the world. Oh, he was the highlight of when we went to the premiere, big man. He was the highlight.
Yeah, he was so friendly as well, and that's the thing.
Go on.
No, I said just him being him.
Always remember when we were literally waiting and he was like, started right at the end of the queue, and he stormed through everybody, greeting them, signing every little thing, and just interacting with everyone. Oh, I love that man. I love Nathan Fillion.
I do.
Don't be garbage. Please don't be garbage.
No, I refuse to believe it.
It just makes you appreciate when people aren't. Mm. When people are just cool people at the end of the day, and when they do, right.
Henry Cavill, keep building PCs.
And one last thing I'm gonna say. Big shout out to Johnny Depp. Let him kick Amber Heard's ass in the fucking court.
You called it. I would say
I called it.
You called it. We have told a story, right?
I think I've told it multiple times.
We told the story multiple times. We told the story about when Bruv met Johnny Depp and Amber Heard before it was official, and he came and was like, "She's garbage. She's a trash human." And I was like, "Bruv, it's you saying that. I'm gonna trust your opinion of her." And now, my girl spread cheeks on the. I can't eat the stuff I'm hearing. Is levels of what the, and also it's like she's got no friends.
Imagine she's got James Franco.
That ain't no one's friend, man. No,
what are you talking about? James Franco, he's only a little bit rapey. It's fine.
He's not been cancelled, man. So he don't need
this. There's some things you don't say. There's some friends you shouldn't have. I say, my best friends are Kelly. You don't say, you don't have them as friends. They aren't the arbiters you think they are. They're just not.
Jeez.
Like, what I was hearing, I heard a story about, what Johnny Depp was telling on, or I say a story, he was telling his, it was, I think, a story, about the interaction between him, Amber, and Paul Bettany and his kids. The bitch made Paul Bettany's 18-year-old cry because she just wanted to be proven wrong in a fucking argument about a subject the boy has actually been studying for years. So he had some facts, and because she didn't want to be proven to lose, I mean, she just said some horrible things to make the kid upset and make him cry. And you're like, and then Johnny's like, you need to learn just to be wrong. Seriously, you need to learn to be wrong. But that says a lot about the type of person she is, because I watching her on the stand, really, like, obviously it's been her turn to be on the stand, like the amount of contradictive bullshit she's been saying, like watching her pose on camera for pictures of her like rubbing her nose, watching her try so hard to cry on cue, which she cannot do, by the way, and
earn her money one way or another.
Say again?
As if she's an actress, this is what she does.
Well, she's doing a bad job. She can't cry on cue. I can cry on cue. I'm an actress.
You got to talk to Mary Elizabeth Winstead about the take she took for Funniest Nation. Do you want to talk about that? Let's do that. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And the whole there's been a clip going around that she's legitimately she was actually on the stand. She actually took a bump.
They think she took a little bump, and it's like, oh boy. But you know what? Another thing is, we were right about Paul Bettany, because those Vijon memes were right, because he did go black dad on her a bit. She's an evil witch. I'm like, Vijon, we were right about you, Paul Bettany. Vijon, me and Wanda don't talk no more. On that note, I think we're gonna call it a night. Thank you for listening to our episode. Like, share, subscribe, do all that stuff. You can check us out on our socials. You can look for us on Instagram at messed up pod. You can find us on Twitter at andmessed. You can email us at stjudesavengers@gmail.com. Big man, what is your socials?
My socials is on Twitter. You can find me at war3782, and on the gram at Mr_RobertV1. How about you, Mr. Classic Sir?
You can find me if you look hard enough. Boom. I'm joking. You can find me on YouTube on the Insta Classic Gaming. You can also find me on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitch under InstantClassic_Gaming.
Thank you so much for your time. You guys stay safe out there. And laters. Laters,
and that's why we're messed up. Produced by the St. Jude's Avengers, edited by Instant Classic Gaming, and music produced by Box Room Music.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.